Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I have the great pleasure, sometimes you just love your job, right, to talk about To Kill a Mockingbird with two of the fine actors in the show is my great pleasure this hour, and I hope that some of you who have already seen the show, which just opened recently, will call in today. The Milwaukee Rep is doing To Kill a Mockingbird, and they have extended the show because there is still, after all these years, deep interest in seeing this beautiful play. The performances have been extended through Sunday, March 11. There are 30 book discussions taking place because it is all part of the Big Read in Milwaukee. Milwaukee Rep was awarded a grant to host the Big Read in conjunction with their production of To Kill a Mockingbird. The artistic director said, "I chose to do To Kill a Mockingbird in our season because it is a book that contains an important and powerful message about the effects of prejudice. I believe that theater provides a platform for dialogue that we need to have in our community to counteract this sort of prejudice. It is an iconic American classic. I know for me and for many of you listening, it really is one of my favorite books and movies and now plays. I'd never seen it on stage, and I'm glad I did." We have two of the actors with us. Lee Ernst plays Atticus Finch. What an incredible honor it must be to play Atticus Finch on the stage. He also is the fight director. I'm not joking. There's a fight, and so we'll ask him about that. He's rep resident acting company member. He is incredibly versatile. He was just seen performing the role of Bob Cratchit in A Christmas Carol at the Pabst. He played Vince Lombardi in the Rep's powerhouse production of Lombardi. He's been a member of the Rep's resident acting company since 93. He was Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman, and he's been in many, many other productions. This past summer, he directed Hamlet at Texas Shakespeare's Festival, and he has done performances for the Peninsula Players in Door County, and I could go on and on, but I won't because it will take up too much time. Lee, thank you very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Kathleen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, great pleasure to have you here. Jonathan Daly plays Sheriff Heck Tate. He also is a Rep resident acting company member, and he has been in many productions. He was in the Christmas Carol, of course, as well. He has been a member of the Rep's resident acting company since 1998. He is a founding member of the Great River Shakespeare Festival in Winona, Minnesota, a veteran of regional theaters throughout the country. He's appeared with American Players Theater, Clarence Brown Theater Company, Indiana Rep. He is also a playwright. His musical memoir, The Daily News, was produced at the Milwaukee Chamber Theater, and he has a new play, To the Promised Land, which will be at First Stage Children's Theater next year. And a great pleasure to have you with us, Jonathan.
Thanks,
Thank
Kathleen.
You so much.
Great to be here.
Well, it is probably true for both of you as well, but it must be to be able to take these words and perform them on the stage in a play that just has so much in it, honor and family and parents and prejudice and all of that. It's just such a powerful work of art, isn't it? You must just feel privileged to be able to do this on the stage. Lee?
Absolutely. There's a wonderful energy in the theater every night when we go out. It's very exciting because when we gather backstage, you can feel the energy of the audience, and it's palpable. I mean, there's a great force out there, and you know that the familiarity that people have with this story is so, the connection is so powerful that they're just hungry and expectant. So getting out and teasing out the story as we do each night is, it's really a delight because the audience doesn't know what kind of ride they're in for. Mm-hmm. You know, my nephew saw it last night. He's in the Navy. He's heading to Sicily next week. And he said, "Oh, To Kill a Mockingbird, I have to see that before I leave the country." And he was so thrilled. He said at the end, do other productions do what you did with this play? Do they have music? Do they do is it staged the same way? And he was just really impressed to learn that we're doing something very unique
it is
with
very
the story.
Unique. I was thinking about that before I saw it because we have the film, and it is a beautiful film, and we have the book. And the play, I've never seen it performed on stage before, and I know you've done some different things with it, but the expectations are great. You had to give us something that was different than something that's been done beautifully. That's a hard task.
Yeah, and the script is really it's not that different from the book. It's not that different from the movie. Because, you know, the novel of To Kill a Mockingbird is kind of like the novel too of Mice and Men, where it's really so much of the language is the dialogue of the characters. So it's most of the scripts that you see of To Kill a Mockingbird are pretty much standard things, that, you know, what you'd expect from it, almost like it's a screenplay. And so Aaron, our director, really decided that he wanted to create something unique. The thing that's great about Aaron is that he creates this just complete world that people just can walk into and experience around the play. So it enriches the play because he's added all this wonderful texture. The set and the lighting and the music has just creates this whole experience around the story that's what makes it so unique. That's what makes it uniquely a theatrical event. And just about everybody in this play, or, you know, people who have experience as actors, have done this play before. And it's every production's a little bit different. This, I think, is a really unique theatrical production of the play.
Yeah.
And yet it's still, at the same time, it's really faithful to the story.
I can't remember... This is, it's one of those books. There are a couple things. I've had the great pleasure of talking about Charles Dickens and now Harper Lee and To Kill a Mockingbird this week, both of whom were not only books that I love, but they were incredibly influential in my life. You know, we sometimes, they just hugely influential in so many ways. And I was wondering as I was watching it, because I was struck by the language of Lee, and I like to read it aloud, and I love the film. And maybe I wept a little bit reading the book, but I got to tell you, I sobbed watching this. I don't know what, and my friend who I was with, we were just crying. We had to get the Kleenex out and then another piece of Kleenex. And I'm wondering what it was about the theatrical experience that both of us, and I know other people in the audience, had that same reaction.
I'm struck with that reaction performing it each time. It's hard. I remember seeing the documentary, Hey Boo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
oh,
came
boo.
Out.
Hey, boo, I love that
line.
Yeah.
And this was recently done, I believe, but they had a nice clip of Gregory Peck talking about the moment where he's questioning Tom, and at the end of the examination, he asked him, "Why did you run?" And said, if you were a colored man, you'd run too. And Peck says, "I had to turn away from him at that moment in the filming because I knew I would cry if I looked at him." And that energy, I think, is underneath this entire story. It's that well, Finch also has the line. He says, it seems that when they do it, when this kind of thing happens, it seems that only children weep. But I think this touches the child in all of us.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that sentiment is in there.
Yeah.
And seeing those children on stage acting out this play, I think, makes a
so
big
beautiful
impression
yeah.
on people. Because they are they're such wonderful actors.
Yeah. They really are.
You really completely suspend that idea that oftentimes you'll have in a play of oh, aren't these kids, they're good, they're doing a good job, they're keeping up with the adults, and it's kind of cute, you know. These young people are totally actors in their own right, and you just bypass that completely, and you're right into the understanding the characters and empathizing with them.
Were they directed? I thought I read they were directed separately, or were there two directors?
Not exactly. There were two Aarons on this project, Aaron Posner and his wife, Aaron Weaver. And Aaron was a child actress. And
really?
Yeah, she was in early production of Les Mis, I believe, when she was quite young.
Did like the national tour, I think, of Les Mis.
Yeah. So she has worked with Aaron in the past when there have been children involved in the cast. So Aaron, first of all, wanted the children to be treated as adults, I mean as professionals, I should say. And he wanted to open up the possibility of them appearing on stage with seasoned actors and not standing out as, oh, and then there were the children.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron Weaver knows how to communicate so well with children, and she facilitated all of that. So they weren't rehearsed separately necessarily, but they had a private coach who would kind of rush in and whisper a few things to them, and then we would do the scene again. And she was a wonderful middle person to have in this process. It was very unique, I think.
Yeah.
Jonathan, you have said, and I listened to that. I was at the talk back after Sunday's performance, too, in which there was a lot of discussion about issues of race and how you dealt with them as a cast and how Milwaukee is dealing with them. You have been quoted as saying, Jonathan, that this is a story that has a lot more relevance to Milwaukee in 2012 than most of us care to admit. It shows how far we've come with race relations in the last 75 years and how much further we have to go. Why did you specifically reference Milwaukee?
Well, to backtrack a little bit, Eva Balistrieri, one of our actors, found a piece in the newspaper just a couple of weeks ago that really, it was from the New York Times, and it talks about this whole idea of black man syndrome, how there are increasingly documented cases of people, particularly white women, when basically blaming black men as an opportunity to get out of some kind of situation that they're in, because there is this sense among white people that if you put a black person in the middle of this story, you're going to buy it. There are examples like Susan Smith that comes right to mind. A few years ago in South Carolina, the woman who basically drove her children into a lagoon, and her attempt to get out of responsibility for this act was to say that they had been kidnapped by black men. It happened, I remember a few years ago, a woman was trying to, she was due to get married, and she didn't show up for the wedding. And several days went by, and there was this big mystery about what happened to her. And then this story came out that she had been abducted by a black man. A week later, it was revealed that there was no black man, that she had made up this story because she didn't want to get married on that day. That somehow people know that if you put a black man at the center of it, then it's going to get some kind of – people are going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a national phenomenon, you know. But it also it comes – I think it comes into play in Milwaukee because it's pretty clear – to people that Milwaukee has some real specific issues as far as about segregation and just that kind of awareness of that there is there are two worlds. There are still two worlds to this day, a black world and a white world. And you know, I think the point that this play makes is that we're never going to be done with this issue. I mean, we can say, oh, look, it's so much better than it was in 1935 or in 1960. But the point is, it's never going to be a finished issue until the last person, the most difficult person to reach about this issue, has been reached and has changed their thinking. Mm. And, you know, that's something that will be worked on for forever because it's a big world out there. And there are a lot of people that, you know, have beliefs about white people who have beliefs about black people that still have yet to be reached. They still are thinking the same way people were thinking in 1935.
Mm-hmm.
And we just won't be finished until we hit every single person,
mm-hmm.
and change every single mind, which is...
Yeah. What did you go through playing Atticus when you're defending Robinson? I mean, it's such a... So many issues of just complete injustice here. When you're performing this, I'm sure that you, as a person, Lee Ernst, who thinks about these issues and lives in Milwaukee and is concerned about race issues, etc. Did you get... I'm wondering how you... And you were almost crying at points when you were defending him. I'm wondering how you incorporated the massive injustice of everything that was going on as you were performing Atticus on stage.
I think... Primarily what I deal with when I'm doing the scene is the actor's task. You know, what's your intention? What's your objective? You have to maintain a very specific focus through the scene. So what you're talking about, my personal beliefs and issues, don't necessarily come to the fore, or at least I'm not mindful of that.
No.
But they do surprise me at times.
Oh.
Certain lines when I, because I do use the audience a bit as the jury and as the observers, and I look people in the eye. And that's a it's a difficult thing to do, one, because you never know who you're going to look at. I'm on our first preview, I placed the jury in the center of the house, and I looked out, and I went, oh, my neighbors. And it's like, they don't look terribly interested. Maybe I'm, you know. But that apart, when I get to really poignant lines such as, she merely broke a rigid code of our society. She did something that in our society is unspeakable. She tempted a black man. She was white, and she kissed a black man. Saying that and looking out and realizing in the moment that that's an incendiary thing to say in a group of 700 people, that there are very strong, distinctive opinions across the board, and people feel very strongly about these racial issues. Many people are enlightened, I would say, and many people are unable to be comfortable discussing or even being put in the presence of those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel some bristling, as well as I can feel people opening up and saying, yes, please, you know. So I guess that's one thing that keeps me engaged and keeps me moving forward and just, fulfilled doing this project. It fills me up, being able to ride the surfboard of this issue in the presence of these disparate opinions, and just wondering what effect it is going to have, knowing in that moment that when people are put in the presence of these ideas, that they do have to reckon with it. And so that, to me, is suggests the importance of what we're doing.
Yeah, and in that case, the actor's task becomes this very similar to the lawyer's task, because the lawyer might be getting involved in it too. Atticus is getting involved in it, but he's got to push on. He's got to keep the issue on the table, because that's what everybody is there for. It's to hear the evidence and to judge the evidence. And so I think it's you know, the two tasks come together, so they kind of feed each other.
Yeah. I was amazed when you talk about wildly different ideas people would have about the white woman kissing a black man. I was amazed how many people were coming to this for the first time, who had never seen the movie or read the book. You knew that. Even people around me who were just, you could tell it was the first experience for them of this work. To me, it's a memory piece that has influenced my life over the past how many years now. For some people, they're just seeing it for the first time, and students will be seeing it for the first time.
Yes.
Many of them.
Yeah.
What response are you getting from first-time viewers of To Kill a Mockingbird?
Well, without giving away the story to people who haven't seen it,
it's okay. But the audience knows, you know, about it probably.
There are moments that I hear gasps in the audience when certain events take place, because they really are surprised. They think it's going to go in a certain direction, and it doesn't, and it really surprises people. That's amazing to me. It's a real testament to how terrific the story is, and how much people get involved in the story. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things about the emotional response to this play is, again, it's all about what Atticus says about, you know, you really don't understand a person until you've walked in their shoes. And that's the whole that's the whole point that Harper Lee is trying to do. And that's
compassion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Empathy, compassion, and she succeeds. And that's why people find the play so moving, is because they are walking around in the shoes of these people.
Mm-hmm. And what about the young people? In the talk back, the actor who played Dill was talking about the fact that in school he never learned anything, which made me wonder about schools, too, because I know there are some schools like Milwaukee Public Schools, if you go to those schools, you really know your Black history. You know
right.
this stuff backward and forward. If you go to schools elsewhere, maybe you don't. And it made me, when you, segregation of schools and of our communities, it just, we should be so far beyond that, and we're just not.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, when you have, tell me more about the Big Read and the young people who are coming to see the performance and who do not, or maybe have not read the book, or how all of that is affecting them. Is this something that, my gosh, I never knew about this, or what is it?
I feel it would be very disingenuous of me not to to address this question without admitting that I didn't read this book or see this film until about a year ago.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
And that's an admission, really?
Yeah.
How did you miss it?
Well, because as Ed, I was actually the MC of the kickoff event for the Big Read, and they asked me to insert personal story here in the copy, and I just told this anecdote about my past and about my schooling, and that in second grade I was put in the slow learners reading group.
Oh my goodness.
And it became a stigma for me. I then identified myself as a slow reader, as somebody who could not read. And I carried that with me to this day. Reading for me, there's a barrier for me. I just have a little trouble getting through that. So it's ironic that I am in, you know, a profession of words, but it's true. You know, there are many wonderful tomes that I have not touched, and this was one of them. And my wife is a voracious reader, and she would say, "You should read To Kill a Mockingbird. It's the best. It's the most wonderful." And it's like, I will. I know I should. I will. And they said, "Well, at least watch the movie." It's like, "No, I should read the book first." But I just for most of my life I have put it off, and so I'm one of those newbies now to this story.
That
it's
is
like,
an amazing story.
But yeah, it's true.
And then you're playing Atticus.
I know. Luke. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So just the world is a strange place sometimes.
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of people, I don't remember reading To Kill a Mockingbird as a kid. I remember reading it the first time I did To Kill a Mockingbird, and I read it then. But I was probably 35 or something. Hmm. So, you know, the other thing I've noticed about this, when you talk about To Kill a Mockingbird and you talk about kids being exposed to Kill a Mockingbird and their memories of it, it almost always is girls talking about this book.
Mm-hmm.
Because of Scout?
Yeah.
I think because of Scout, because Scout is just this brilliant role model, and girls grow up wanting to be Scout. And not only, that's the other genius about the book, is that not only does Harper Lee show you this wonderful girl that you can look up to, but she also shows who this girl has grown up to be. So she gives a young female reader a goal while they're reading the book. I want to, not only do I appreciate Scout, but I want to grow up and be the older Scout.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the reasons it has such a relevance to women's lives.
Mm-hmm.
More so, I think, than I don't know, maybe boys aren't ready for it or, you know, whatever.
It's interesting because we had a chance to interview Scout, the real Scout, on the movie some time ago. It was the anniversary, who knows what anniversary. And she was late to the interview, and I'm just sitting, where's Scout? I was so excited about interviewing the adult Scout. I couldn't believe how excited I was. She didn't disappoint either, but it was a really, I'm really anticipating this show. And it turns out that she and Gregory Peck were darn good friends, and then he kind of took care of her because she lost her parents early on, and he was just as good a man as he was at
Mockingbird.
It doesn't get better than that, does it?
Yeah. I think the character rubs off on you, too.
Yeah, exactly. We welcome phone calls. I don't know if we're having one of those conversations you feel you can't join, but please, please join us. I know that many of you have read the book, and I hope that we'll hear from some of you who have seen the Reps production, because it is spectacular, and I want to talk about the use of sound and chorus and all of that in a moment, because it makes it more moving, I think, the variety of music that lifts lifts what you see on stage. Here is our number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, or you could send an email, and that's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Jonathan Daly is a rep resident acting company member. He plays Sheriff Heck Tate in the play To Kill a Mockingbird, and you've seen him in many other performances. Lee Ernst, a phenomenally versatile actor, plays Atticus Finch in the current performance of To Kill a Mockingbird. So, oh, we got calls coming in. Good. I hope you've seen the show. If you haven't, it's okay. You can still call. We'll be with you in a moment. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I do want to let you know that To Kill a Mockingbird, the run has been extended through Sunday, March 11. And you can go to MilwaukeeRep.com or their box office is 414-224-9499. Zero. Okay. Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them, actually. Pam in Marshall. Hi, Pam.
Hi. I just want to say that I read To Kill a Mockingbird, and I saw the movie. And in 1969, I was a white teacher in a black school in Detroit, Michigan, dated a black man, and was told that if I didn't say that I wasn't dating a black man, I would lose my teaching license, and I did. So it's been, you know, a lot of years since then, but a profound effect it had on me, and I'm in tears. So thanks for having the show.
Thank you, Pam, for the call. Let's just go to what can you say to that? Annie or Ann in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, this is amazing. I am a slow reader, and I taught literature in college later in life, but I'm still a slow reader. I don't know when I heard one of your guests say that.
Lee Ernst, of all people, I know.
I know you already.
It's a pleasure.
I wasn't going to see the film. The play. A friend suggested. I've seen the film twice. I love it. Now, listening to you, I can't wait.
Great.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You will enjoy it. I want to talk a little bit about the use of sound in this and the chorus and the music that was selected, because it's very different. It's very different probably than most plays. They do it straight, but you've added all of this sound and music. Why? And what does it encompass? What's in the music?
Well, I think it's... John touched on earlier, it's part of the texture and fabric of our storytelling of this piece. But just think about it. Birds, you know, the mockingbird song, the mockingbird sings, mm-hmm. doesn't bother anybody. When you sing, you come together. We're creating harmony. We start the show with harmony. And there's something about that works on the subconscious level that brings us into the parlor so that we can relax, unburden ourselves, and drop our guards and just hear the story. So I think that's the initial thing that the music does for us in this production.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was arrived really organically, because the sound designer, who's actually a composer, James Sugg, he came into the process with this idea. He and Aaron had this idea that there was going to be a lot of music in it, and there was going to be maybe some underscoring of scenes. They knew that they wanted to use certain instruments, you know. And then they came to Milwaukee and they encountered this cast. 26 people are in this play, and they discovered that a lot of these people can sing. And
can they ever? And it's there are some really good voices.
Yeah. And it just opened up again. It just it took the musical soundscape of it and just expanded it to, wow, well, we can do this and we can do that and we can have choruses and we can have, and that's when so it was really a process of discovering what elements they had, what resources they had here that led to, so that's what makes it it's a unique production to this theater, because it's created by. You couldn't do this anywhere else. because it really came out of the talents that the people possess here.
We hired one professional musician, Fred Pike, who plays steel guitar and acoustic guitar and I think banjo-lele and something else. But the other musicians are the interns, are many of our intern company. And some of them actually learned instruments for this show. So F. Tyler Burnett is, has taught himself how to play the bones and the spoons and provides wonderful percussion background as well as some amazing dog barks, live dog barks that you swear are authentic. I don't know how he does it.
But that was a person doing that.
That was a guy.
That was good.
Yeah.
That was good. I thought it was.
And two other actors learned to play harmonica for the piece. And Cody Craven, who is just a young kid from California, 20 years old, playing some amazing guitar and providing vocals. So, yeah, there's some wonderful talent there.
Yeah, Ora Jones turns out to, I mean, you know, the woman who playing Calpurnia turns out to have this magnificent voice. So, you know.
And Lee Palmer, of course,
What does that do for the story to have these centers of I don't know, of there's moral centers, you know, the reverend of the community and Calpurnia, and they're not only are they there as a center in the characters, but they're able to give voice to it musically. So it's great.
Oh, it's so nice that was it. You didn't know what you had, and you found that you had it, and then you used it, and you had to figure out a way to get to what they had too, which is. That's great.
Another great thing about having a resident company and having a theater tradition in a town is somebody comes to the town and goes, my gosh, look at all the talent here.
Right. Yeah.
The bench is deep.
Yeah, right.
Thanks, Ann, very much for the call. Mark from Milwaukee. Hi, Mark.
Hi, this is Mark from Milwaukee, and I just wanted to let Mr. Ernst know that he is not the only one who just got a hold of To Kill a Mockingbird in the last 2 or 3 years. I'm in my 40s, and I finally saw the movie and read the book and got the soundtrack, and I just saw this past weekend at the Rep, and it was fantastic. So don't feel like because you've been a slow reader, some of us just don't get around to
it. I have a feeling there's a club being established here.
Okay. But my comment is that I wanted to get your comment, and I'll take it off the air, is my favorite scene in To Kill a Mockingbird is how a lynch mob was defused by a young girl. And I have my own theories as to how that could impact people. I'd like to hear yours, and I'll take my comment off the air.
How she could do that. Well, I think that whole entailment case, that entailment idea, I don't know. I think just the what we get in that moment is that pure innocence in the face of an absolute tremendous potential for something terrible about to happen, that innocent voice stepping up and naming a name in the dark group, putting a face, on Mr. Cunningham in that moment, I think is huge. And out of the mouths of babes, you know, she not only puts a face on him, but then she is able to bring up the very thing that concerns him most.
Yes.
And she gets right to the heart of his problem. And I think it disarms him in the moment. And when he's disarmed, there's a ripple effect. All of a sudden, as soon as he is named and identified and touched, it, by association, touches the other members of that mob one by one. And they become pliant, and we're able to disperse them. But you're right. I mean, it's a fantastic moment.
And isn't that a couple of scenes before, isn't that when Atticus talks about the whole walking in another person's shoes?
Yes, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, what does she do? She puts herself in Walter Cunningham's shoes.
She does it, exactly.
And says, gee, entailment's a terrible thing, and, you know, my dad says that we all just have to pull together, and, I mean,
We're still friends. No matter what happens, we are still friends.
Yeah.
And that is it. Yeah, the application of the lessons that we get from Atticus through Scout.
By golly, no wonder this is so good. I mean, they're just those moments that just cut through everything. It's just good.
Yeah, that's where I think that's where it hits the parent too. You know, it's it be great if something we said to our kids they actually was actually useful to them, and that they could and that they could really affect some kind of change. By some, and being inspired by something we say,
it happens. Sometimes you just don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you get
surprised, don't you?
Yeah. I said that a long time ago. That's remembered. Yeah.
And Atticus says, you know, maybe I'm asking too much. And he just closes down the argument and walks away. But it does take, you know, does land on them and manifests in a wonderful way.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little more about Atticus because, you know, Atticus is a lot of people's hero and has been for years. Mm. And it's got to make you think about all these moral decisions you're making every day to be privileged to play Atticus Finch. There's just, he's a wonderful, wonderful, highly moral man. He's just a good, good man.
Well, that's actually the image we had to work against, because it's easy to perceive Atticus as a knight in shining armor. you know, the glorious, wonderful, tall, dark, and handsome Gregory Peck just being, my hero. Aaron wanted to find the warts, as we say, and look deeper and find out what makes him complex. You know, what are the obstacles that he is up against? He does not enter the story as a hero necessarily. He leaves the story. He departs as a hero in his kids' eyes. But they, you know, Jem goes off on him. It's like, why can't he be a truck driver or a whatever? You know, he comes up with all these jobs that would be much more suitable for his dad instead of a pencil pusher, basically. So so my ears have been on looking for those evidence of that, and the way the community looks on him as somebody who is not capable of raising those children, that he's always up against that, and that when he takes on the Tom Robinson case, how once again the town, the conventional wisdom of the town, is against him, and he's got to push through that. So you're right. It is an honor and a privilege, and it's ennobling, and it's a gift. You know, roles like this. John has also played Atticus, no doubt, and you know as well as anybody that it's it does something to you. Acting gives back.
I'm sure.
You know, it's.
Yeah. I'm sure.
The moment the in Act Two when you know when the story literally hits home with Atticus. Yeah, you know, and it actually enters into his living room.
Mm-hmm.
That's an amazing thing,
mm-hmm.
Especially if you know if you're playing the role and you have kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean it just hits you right between the eyes. And I think that's one of the things that people empathize with too is that you know even the most who seems to be the most perfect parent, there's going to be a moment when something you do has a negative effect on your kids, mm-hmm. and there's nothing you can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really gonna be true to yourself, you are unwittingly maybe, but you're exposing your kids to danger, and that's a tough truth to take as a parent.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Keith in La Crosse. Hi, Keith.
Good morning. The show this morning is fantastic, and production just sounds spectacular. I'm currently a criminal defense lawyer in La Crosse.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 80s, when there was a big growth of theater in Chicago, I was toiling in Chicago with my own theater company, trying to change the world a la Clifford Odets and creating a revolution.
All right. Waiting for
you. You can imagine how much money I was making with that theater company.
we know the cat contracts.
At that point, I realized that I really, what I wanted to do is to work with people and to help people. And I had my whole life really looked up to Atticus Finch, and even recognizing that there are warts, and I think that's what makes him come alive even more. And I specifically went to law school inspired by Atticus Finch to do that type of work.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all came around a couple of years ago when I was asked to go speak to the very first public defender conference in the People's Republic of China.
Oh.
Wow.
And to teach them trial skills, and more importantly, to give them a sort of inspirational speech, because they were just starting a public defender's office, and most of the lawyers were reluctant to do the work. And I specifically talked about Atticus Finch, describing, of course, who Atticus is, and specifically about walking in another person's shoes. And what I was really teaching them was about story, and that how you need to understand another person's story to walk in their shoes and to bring that into a courtroom to really do them any service.
Hmm. Oh, what
That's
a
wonderful.
Story.
That
is.
That
yeah.
Is.
You be in touch with us, Keith. I'm interested in the work you did in China.
It was yeah. exciting. I mean, you can imagine I had people with me at all times, and anything I was going to talk about had to be sort of vetted. So I had to be careful, but what an amazing experience.
Yeah, wow. Thank you. And there are people. It's this kind of play. It was that work. Which had that kind of impact, I think, on a lot of people. There aren't too many works that have that influence, that goes that far in somebody's life. It's big. It's a big thing for people to be touched that way and touched to devote their lives to
exactly,
trying to do
actually,
the right thing, right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. yes. To make a career choice based
right.
on a character.
Exactly.
in
exactly.
So.
Wow.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you, Keith. We have some lines open if you've been trying to get through. 800-486-8655 is the number. We're talking about the Milwaukee Rep Theater's production of To Kill a Mockingbird, which has been extended through March 11. And two of the actors, Lee Ernst, is with us, who plays Atticus in the show, and Jonathan Daly, who plays Sheriff Heck Tate. They are both in our Milwaukee studios. More phone calls momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome more of your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655. Russell in Madison. Hi.
How are you?
Fine, Russell. How are you?
I am just fine.
Good.
Some years ago now, I got to see a performance, or two performances actually, of the play To Kill a Mockingbird. I got to see an afternoon and an evening. In the afternoon show, there was a large contingent of high school kids, this is in Bowling Green, Kentucky, who were African-American, who were watching the play. And it was interesting that when Tom is found guilty, their immediate reaction was, this is incredible. Of course, he's not guilty. How can you possibly find him guilty? And they were dismayed superficially, they were kind of annoyed the way the play turned out. They wanted it to be innocent and end it with a kind of an upbeat, happy ending. But it was interesting, their reaction, in as much as I didn't really know if they'd read the book, or I never did get a chance to talk to them about that or anything. But anyway, I'll have to admit, I cried in the play. Somebody mentioned that, crying to seeing the movie. I cried in the play. My granddaughter was in it as Scout. So mm.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jonathan?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing that always interests me about Harper Lee she could have found him innocent, but the world that they're living in, you know, Atticus says, I mean, Scout says, so is he going to go free? This is before the trial even starts. Are we going to win? And he tells his kid, no,
right.
no, we're not going to win.
Right.
You know, it's clear that this is not going to happen. It does. But there's no that's not a reason not to go and try and to, again, you know, raise the consciousness of some people. You're going to be defeated, but you're going to raise a few people's consciousness, like Heck Tate, this sheriff that starts in one place and ends up another. So you go for those people, and the next time around, you're going to go for the tougher nuts, and you're just going to keep fighting this. A lot of people may end up dying, like Tom Robinson,
yeah.
But eventually you're just it's a slow, agonizing process of trying to raise
exactly
consciousness.
That. It's a process.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a fight. It's
right.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about the process, because it's interesting for you, because you're really tuned into issues of race, to be at one place and then to come out in the play in another place. How do you identify with walking around in the shoes of somebody who came from that initial place in the play?
Yeah, with Heck, I'm not sure if it's a question of empathy, because he doesn't really say a whole lot. He doesn't really reveal a whole lot about his point of view. He's just, he's in that world. Mm-hmm. And he starts on one side of that world, and he starts to move over a little bit toward the end of the play. And I think, to me, the, you know, trying to track where is it that he changes, the only thing that I can really hang my head on at the moment is in the trial. The way Atticus, you know, so brilliantly sent, you know, amasses this evidence, and when the evidence becomes, when the stories start to fall apart, and when the truth starts to reveal itself, or rather, or really the falseness, the lies start to reveal themselves, that Heck is able to go, well, wait a minute, I was there, and I know about the bruise on the face, and I know this, and I know this evidence, and Atticus has just made me realize that that was, that evidence is wrong, or that was planted, or whatever. So it's just putting together the story that makes him realize, gee, there's something's wrong with this. No, somebody's not telling the truth here. So by the time he gets to the end of the play, he can make a decision about how he's going to deal with this as a lawman, you know. But whether he's really had his consciousness raised, you know, what's going to happen 6 months from now if another story happens?
Well, I think the way he steps up in that final scene, in that final dialogue with Atticus, is that's heroic to me, seeing Heck take that step.
Yeah, and he doesn't even know he's being heroic. I think that's the thing.
Right, he's just, you play him that way, right? Know. He doesn't know what he is. Yeah. Russell, thank you. Shirley in Delafield, hi.
Oh, hi. I'm just calling to say I saw the play last week, and it was so amazing. I had seen the movie, and I thought, oh, well, nothing could surpass how the movie influenced me. But indeed, the play was so well performed and so well casted, and the children were amazing, and the music. It certainly brought that story to life even better than the film. So I wanted to encourage people to go see it.
Hooray for theater.
Thank you. Live theater. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shirley. Thanks for the call. Serena in Harbor Springs, Michigan. Hi.
Hi. I would just like to ask if there has been any negative feedback from people who feel that you shouldn't bring back reminders of an earlier time when things were as they were.
Well, that's an interesting question.
That's very interesting. You know, I think it would be a good one to ask our boss, because he probably gets
the mail.
The mail, yeah. 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 I mean, we deal with, the clear thing, you know, the N-word is is dispensed liberally in this play.
Yes.
And there's a lot of really ugly stuff said in the courtroom. I have not been aware of
no, response. We've only been open for about a week, and so the response is usually a little slower in arriving. It will be interesting. Tomorrow we have our first school audience. So we'll have over 700 school kids doing an immersion day where they have a backstage experience with the theater for hours. They have lunch at the theater and interact with actors and other people. But they will see the play, and I expect a lot of vocal response from students during the play. I think that they're going to talk back to us.
How old are they?
Probably middle school to high school. Yeah. Hmm.
Well, that's about the best field trip you can have.
Huh? And we have many, many, many students coming to see this show, which is as it should be. So it's going to be fascinating to see how it lands for them.
And again, looking at this town, this segregated town, I'm looking forward to audiences that are really mixed. You know? I'm really hoping that there's going to be shows where, you know, kids from MPS are mingling with the kids from the suburbs. Mm-hmm. I think that would really be a good experience to have.
Oh, I'm sure that it will be. That would be great to interact with those audiences. Well, and we should say, we only have about a minute left. It is part of the big read. There are people doing, again, I guess if you go to the Rep's webpage or phone number, there are public readings going on of To Kill a Mockingbird, and there are talkback sessions, and there's a study guide thing too about Jim Crow.
BigRead.com.
PBS.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a website to
BigReadMilwaukee.com.
BigReadMilwaukee.com.
Yes.
And you can get all the information. Mm-hmm. Did we miss anything?
Probably. But, you know, there's a lot of meat.
There's a lot of meat. We're going to put, Rhonda reminds me, we'll post all of this information on our Facebook page.
Oh, great.
I love Facebook for moments like these. Mm. Isn't it great? Go to the Kathleen Dunn Show and there will be information. Well, gentlemen, a great privilege. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being with
great,
us.
Great to
Thank
be
you.
Here.
Yeah, it was a really
absolutely.
Good hour, and it's a wonderful production. You may have to extend it again, you think?
Gee, we wouldn't turn it down.
I'll bet you wouldn't. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, our guests this hour are in the Milwaukee Rep production of To Kill a Mockingbird, which has been extended through Sunday, March 11. Go to, for tickets, MilwaukeeRep.com. That's capital M, capital R, altogether.com. And there you will get information. Our thanks to Jonathan Daly. He plays Hector Tate, the sheriff, in To Kill a Mockingbird. And Lee Ernst, who plays Atticus Finch in the production. And it's a good one. Thank you for listening, everybody. Thanks for all of your calls. This is an interesting day, huh? Joseph McCarthy and To Kill a Mockingbird. It's good. We'll be with you again tomorrow, where I have no idea what we're talking about. I think we're going to talk about the companies in China. You know, ever since that story broke about Apple in China, I've been disturbed. And we're going to talk about corporations in China and more. And the Arab Spring. Thank you. Until tomorrow, lots of great conversations ahead.